Hello, once again, welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Sarah LeDuc. In studio today for this Medical Monday is Dr. Tanya Thompson-Bottomosi of St. Peter's Diabetes and Endocrine Care. She specializes in diagnosis and treatment of diabetes, as well as disorders and diseases of the thyroid, parathyroid, adrenal, and pituitary glands. Dr. Thompson-Bottomosi is board certified in endocrinology, diabetes, and metabolism and internal medicine. She studied at St. George's University School of Medicine and completed her residency and fellowship at SUNY Downstate Health Sciences University. To participate in today's discussion, you can call 800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. We'll give the number many times throughout the show, as you all are no doubt used to. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org, V-O-X-P-O-P, voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Tanya Thompson-Bottomosi, welcome to Vox Pop. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. How do you come to specialize in diabetes and endocrinology? What about it struck your interest and made you want to pursue it?
And my initial interest was family members with endocrine disorders such as pituitary and thyroid disorders. So that was the initial interest. And when I went to medical school, it was the field that interested me the most.
What are some of the most common disorders of these glands that people might want to call in about this afternoon?
Diabetes is very common. A large population has pre-diabetes or type 2 diabetes. Type 1 diabetes is also fairly common. Thyroid disorders as well, and parathyroid disorders.
There are, as you've just mentioned, two types of diabetes. Of course, a lot of people will be familiar with the differences, but in case they aren't, could you line them up for us?
Type 2 diabetes is essentially insulin resistance. And so typically people with type 2 diabetes may be overweight or, it occurs more often in older people, or the older we get.
Right. They used to call it adult onset.
Diabetes. And then type 2 diabetes is insulin deficiency. And it is typically autoimmune in nature, and usually in younger individuals. But we do have, in a subset of those diagnosed with diabetes, something in between. And we call that 1.5 or 1.5 diabetes.
Okay.
But that's
a whole other thing.
A whole other thing, yes.
1-800-348-2551 to join the conversation. Ask your questions. 800-348-2551. Dr. Tanya Thomas-Bottomosi of St. Peter's Diabetes and Endocrine Care is our guest this afternoon. Are you ready for a question from a listener?
Sure.
All right. Let's go now to Nancy in Glenville. Hello, Nancy.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for taking my call. Good afternoon, Doctor.
Good afternoon.
Hi. I'm a hypothyroid patient, and I've been this way since probably 2007, and I find myself usually middle of the day, late afternoon, early afternoon, hitting a wall, right? There's zero energy, like my tank is just empty, like I just need to sit down. And my numbers are good, my thyroid tests well, I'm not anemic. As far as I know, my blood sugars are good. So I don't know how to explain that to myself and what to do about it. Do you have any thoughts?
Now, did you say you were a hypo or hyperthyroid?
Hypo.
Okay. So you are on medication for that?
Yes, Armour.
Armour thyroid. Okay. And you said your numbers are good. Okay, so you're on Armour thyroid. Did you try Synthroid or another medication prior to the Armour thyroid?
Yes, and it didn't work as well for me. So my doctor at that time suggested the Armour, and that seemed to bring me to a place where I I felt closer to normal.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, I have a couple of thoughts. One is, with the armor thyroid, you tend to have a higher T3 than the T4. And so those kind of need to be balanced. If your T3 and your T4 levels, and these are thyroid hormones, if they are normal and your TSH is also normal, you also have to look at the range of normal for the TSH. Some people feel better with the TSH in the lower limit of normal, without making you hyperthyroid. And it is kind of counterintuitive. The lower the TSH is, the higher the levels are, and vice versa. So that is something that you can discuss with your provider. The other thing is, you want to rule out that there's nothing else going on that is outside of the hypothyroidism. Is there another disorder or abnormality going on? You mentioned that you were tested for anemia and you're not anemic. What about your stress level? Are you sleeping well? What other medications are you taking? Are there any other interactions? So these are other things that I would discuss, because even though you're hypothyroid, and yes, being tired could be a symptom of hypothyroidism, it doesn't mean that it's necessarily due to that.
Okay, thank you so much for your thoughts.
Sure.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for calling,
take
Nancy.
Care.
800.
Thank you.
Sure. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551 for your diabetes and endocrine care questions. Also, the email address again is voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Thompson-Bademosi, you just mentioned the checking levels of thyroid production and thyroid hormones. What are thyroid hormones responsible for in the body? What do they make function, and if they are at a deficit or overproduction, what do they influence?
Yeah, so there are several different thyroid hormones that we monitor. There's the TSH, which most people are familiar with, the thyroid stimulating hormone. This is actually a pituitary hormone, not a thyroid hormone itself. And the TSH comes from the pituitary gland in the brain and is responsible for stimulating the production of thyroid hormone by the thyroid gland. These thyroid hormones are T3 and T4. Typically, the TSH is the first hormone to be tested, then the T4, sometimes the T3. The T3 is leothyronine, and then the T4 is thyroxine. But if the TSH goes up, that's the pituitary gland stimulating the production of thyroid hormone by the thyroid gland. And that is done when the T4 and the T3 are low, or it's trying to stimulate the production because they are lower, and vice versa. If those levels are high, then the TSH tends to be low. So if there's a disorder, primary hypothyroidism or primary hyperthyroidism, then those levels are skewed. So if there's an overproduction of thyroid hormone, then the TSH tends to be low, and that's hyperthyroidism. If there's underproduction of thyroid hormone, then the TSH tends to be high, and the other levels are low. That's primary thyroid disorders. We also have secondary, which is a pituitary abnormality, and not as common.
The pituitary gland produces thyroid-stimulating hormone. I've just learned this from you. Is that all the pituitary gland does, or is it responsible for other elements in the system?
No, it's responsible for several hormones. And we have what we call negative feedback, because the pituitary gland makes several stimulating hormones. It controls the production of hormones from the adrenal gland. Cortisol is from the adrenal gland, so we have a pituitary hormone called ACTH. We have prolactin that's made by the pituitary gland, which is responsible for milk production in women after childbirth. And we have something called IGF-1, which we measure. It's a marker of growth hormone that's made from the pituitary gland as well. and as its name implies, responsible for growth. And we have the FSH and LH hormones from the pituitary gland. These are responsible for gonadal hormone production. So that would be testosterone primarily in men, estrogen, progesterone in women. So if there is an abnormality in any of these hormones, it results in an endocrine disorder.
Though the pituitary gland is a little gland responsible for a lot of things.
Responsible for many wow. other endocrine glands.
And a lot that you would have to check out if there's a deficiency in a patient.
Yes.
800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We are going to return to your calls, but first we'll take a break. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Tanya Thomason-Badamosi of St. Peter's Diabetes and Endocrine Care. Again, the phone number, 1-800-348-2551. Call up with your diabetes and endocrine questions. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org, and we'll be back after this. Welcome back to Vox Pop. It's Medical Monday, and I'm Sarah LaDuke in for Ray Graff this afternoon. Our guest is Dr. Tanya Thomason-Badamosi of St. Peter's Diabetes and Endocrine Care. The phone number, 800-348-2551. Again, 800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. What do you say? Should we go back to the phones?
Absolutely.
All right. Let us go to Jim in Simsbury. Hello, Jim.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, and good afternoon to both of you.
Good afternoon.
I guess I have kind of two questions.
That's allowed.
One is, I had a doctor tell me once, eat a spoonful of peanut butter before you go to bed. Somehow or another benefits you from a diabetic standpoint. And I've heard things on news media and the like. And my question is there good science behind these things? And would a normal nutritionist know about these if I see such a person? And second question,
Jim, you're breaking up. Did you?
Well, that there's. Is this better?
Well, it's hard to say until you talk.
Is this
more.
Better?
That's better.
Okay. I know there are turf wars.
It got worse. Oh, Jim, I'm so sorry. I'm going to have to, for the sake of everyone listening, hang up on you, and I apologize, but we cannot have the phone unintelligible. Good luck with your evening peanut butter. I hope that it helps everything in your life. 1-800-348-2551 is the call. 800-348-2551. That's the number to call. Let's go to Ruth in Del Mar. Hello, Ruth.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
Thank you for having this show. My question is, I've read a lot because I went for my annual physical maybe 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and they determined I had like a pre-diabetic or borderline diabetic A1C level. So now I've been reading and doing stuff. I'm not overweight. I teach exercise classes, not like CrossFit, but, exercise classes. And I hear that like 2/3 of our country is like borderline or pre-diabetic or kind of insulin resistant because of our diet. And so I found the glucose goddess. I think she's big on the internet, but I found her by her book. And a few things she says are like to eat a veggie starter before each meal, limit your carbs, maybe move for 10 minutes within 90 minutes of eating. And I think these are all really helpful. And I guess I'm just wondering for ways to stay at the pre-level and not go into full diabetes. And if the doctor has any tips or any opinion about Jesse and Chopay, the glucose goddess.
Dr. Tanya Thomason-Badamosi, do you know the glucose goddess from the internet?
I do not.
Okay. So we can't speak to her.
She's got three books. She has three books in addition to.
Of course.
She's big on
Sorry,
women.
I didn't mean to
anyway,
disparage.
Anyway, she gives very practical tips about how to try and stave off diabetes. And I wondered if the doctor had any in addition, and if she has any opinion about those that I mentioned.
Yeah, so with regard to the tips that you mentioned from the goddess, I would say that those do seem to be helpful tips in general with prediabetes, which can be diagnosed with an A1C that is increased, but not increased to the point of diabetes. And I'll just go over that quickly. A normal A1C is 5.6 or less. And this is a blood test, and it's a 3-month average of your blood sugars. So 5.6 or less is considered normal. Someone with an A1C level of 5.7 to 6.4 is considered in the pre-diabetic range and are typically diagnosed as having pre-diabetes. And many people commonly refer to this as borderline diabetes, but we call it pre-diabetes in the medical community. An A1C of 6.5 or higher is consistent with diabetes. So the tips that you mentioned are the cornerstone of preventing the formation of type 2 diabetes. So exercise. And, you know, people are able to exercise to different degrees, but if you can do 30 minutes of cardio exercise a few times a week, that would be helpful. Strength training as well can be helpful. Building muscle helps to burn extra calories, burn fat. Diet, making changes to the diet in terms of carb reduction. The breads, rice, potato, pasta, sweets, sugary drinks. Limiting those things can be helpful as well. Also, stress reduction, getting more sleep. Those are the modifiable risk factors for the development of type 2 diabetes. There are the non-modifiable risk factors such as family history. Many people have a genetic predisposition to the development of type 2 diabetes. Age. Age, we cannot change that. And the risk does increase the older we get. More fiber in the diet as well. So that's something else we can modify, more fiber in the carbs that we consume. So in terms of diabetes prevention, these are some of the things that you can do.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling, Ruth. Have a great day.
Okay, thanks.
1-800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, to pose your questions about diabetes and endocrine care to Dr. Tanya Thompson-Badamosi of St. Peter's. We're going to go to Jim, who's called back on a clear line. Hello, Jim.
Hi, thanks for trying me again.
Sure.
Two questions. One is, I hear from time to time, eat this before that. And I was told, eat some peanut butter before going to bed and what have you. So slight diet modifications that apparently can have an effect. Is that true? And would a normal nutritionist know these things, or would you need to go to somebody who is about diabetes? Then my second question is, we know that there are turf wars within the medical community and so on. Does a normal, well-informed internal medicine person have the skills to manage a diabetic patient?
Okay, good questions, Jim. So I'll address the first question about the peanut butter. So unless you have diabetes and perhaps you have issues with low blood sugar overnight or hypoglycemia, I don't think that there's a need for you to have, you know, a spoonful of peanut butter before you go to bed. So I don't know what the specific circumstance was when that advice was given. In terms of having maybe a non-starchy vegetable or having water before the meal, what I would think is the thought behind that is that you would eat less carbs. So your stomach would be fuller sooner with less calories, and that may be helpful for some people. There's no one diet that works for everybody, but if it's something that works for you, then it may be helpful. Secondly, in terms of an internist taking care of diabetes, generally speaking, internists can and do manage diabetes. When the care of that particular patient or person is beyond the scope of what they're comfortable with, then endocrinologists would be consulted.
Okay. But will a dietitian know various aspects of what a person, you know, peanut butter, no peanut butter, eat this before that?
Sure. Yes, a dietitian should be able to give you individualized recommendations regarding your diet and the peanut butter.
Do they need to be specifically educated in diabetes?
A dietitian, they generally are.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for calling back.
Thanks. Bye.
1-800-348-2551. This is Medical Monday, and we have a lot of people on the phones. Are you good to keep running through these questions, Doctor? Great. Let's go now to Alice in Windsor, Mass. Hello, Alice.
Hi. I have a question for the doctor. I recently had a physical, and my physician felt something in my neck, so he followed up with a TSH and an ultrasound, and my TSH was normal. My ultrasound showed a nodule, and he asked for a thyroid antibody test, and I'm curious what that might be about.
Hey, so I'm not sure why a thyroid antibody test was done in that situation with a normal TSH and the presence of a thyroid nodule on ultrasound. The antibody testing in general is to look for autoimmune thyroid conditions like Hashimoto's with the presence of antibodies or Graves' disease, but you had normal thyroid function tests, so I'm not sure that I would have looked at your antibodies because I don't know what to do with that information if you don't have any sign of thyroid dysfunction. And then in terms of the thyroid nodule, that is something that typically requires monitoring or a biopsy, or in some cases, perhaps surgery to address the nodule based on the features and the characteristics on ultrasound.
Yeah, it did say it was, it looked benign, but again, I don't know how you tell from a scan, but it did indicate that with a follow-up in 3 to 5 years. So
okay. Sounds like it was probably pretty small.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Sure.
Thanks for calling, Alice. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org, and we do have a question in the old inbox. This is from Jen, who says, I recently had blood work done as part of my annual physical. My primary health care provider told me that I was pre-diabetic, but those levels may have been inflated due to some recent treatment using prednisone. She told me not to worry about it, but what should be my next steps? When should I get blood work done again to see if it was prednisone or if I truly am pre-diabetic? I'm an active, otherwise healthy 67-year-old female. That's from Jen.
Okay. So, Jen, in terms of the A1C, I did touch on that earlier.
You did, yes.
Yeah. So the A1C is a 3-month average of your blood sugars. So, yes, prednisone can exacerbate your blood sugars. It can make them higher just being on the prednisone. Some people have increased appetite when they're treated with prednisone as well, so they tend to eat more, which can further increase the blood sugars. So, that being said, if your doctor were to test you again in another 3 months after discontinuation of the prednisone, that would be the ideal time. And again, an A1C greater than 5.6 but less than 6.5 would be considered pre-diabetes.
1-800-348-2551. Our guest on Medical Monday this afternoon is Dr. Tanya Thompson-Badamosi of St. Peter's Diabetes and Endocrine Care. Ready to keep rocking on calls? You are. You're so ready. Let's go now to Lewis in Albany. Hello. Lewis or Louise?
Hello?
Hi.
Yes, Louise.
Louise, sorry.
Hi, how are you? Just a quick question, actually. I wanted to ask the doctor if the A1C test is like the gold standard to diagnose diabetes.
No, the A1C test is not the only way that we diagnose diabetes. We can diagnose diabetes, and typically we like to repeat the test, but we can diagnose diabetes with an A1C test, or we can diagnose type 2 diabetes with a random blood sugar greater than 200 with symptoms of diabetes, and those symptoms would be increased thirst, increased urination, weight loss, blurry vision. Those are the classic symptoms of presentation for diabetes. And we can also use a 2-hour glucose tolerance test, which is a test where you're given a sweet drink and your baseline blood sugars are monitored as well as your sugars throughout that 2-hour period. And if you have elevated blood sugar levels during that time frame, you can also be diagnosed with diabetes.
Can I have a second question?
Sure, go ahead.
If you have, I had the both done, A1C and also the glucose, and they diagnosed me with sugar intolerant, I think it was, or glucose intolerance.
Glucose intolerance.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean that I'm a diabetic or?
No, that is a pre-diabetic state. If they said that you have glucose intolerance, perhaps your blood sugars were elevated, but not high enough to be diagnostic of diabetes.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thanks for calling. 1-800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or voxpop at wamc.org. This is Medical Monday, and we are speaking with Dr. Tanya Thompson-Badamosi of St. Peter's Diabetes and Endocrine Care. And we'll go now back to the phones and to Susan in Albany. Hello, Susan.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, good. I'm on?
You sure are.
Okay. My boyfriend recently had his second ablation because he has AFib, irregular heartbeat. You're familiar with ablations?
Yes.
And he said I see that his last hemoglobin A1C was 5.6, and the one before he had 91 for the glucose, his level was 99. He's on some meds now, and when we see the doctor in September, they'll probably take him off some of them. But he said to me he'll probably be on a beta blocker. And one thing he is on is Sotalol, which is partial beta blocker. And he's on Eliquis and Diltiazin and Etazimambe. They may have taken him off the Diltiazin, but he said when you're on a beta blocker, he heard, that you get diabetes. Is that a true statement?
Some medications can cause some glucose intolerance, but typically not diabetes.
Typically not.
Mm-hmm. Unless, somebody is predisposed.
And with a hemoglobin A1C, I heard what you said about when it goes over to 5.7, you're pre-diabetes. But if it's 5.6 and a 91 or 99 glucose, does that indicate pre-diabetes?
No. An A1C of 5.6 is normal, although it's close to the level of 5.7, which would indicate prediabetes. A fasting blood glucose less than 100 is considered normal, so he would not be classified.
Okay, so there isn't a guarantee he's going to get diabetes because he's going to go on a...
No. And one thing I didn't mention before is that you can also diagnose diabetes with a fasting blood sugar greater than 126.
Oh.
But he's not anywhere near there.
7.2.
Sorry?
That's probably not terrible, right?
We didn't hear what you said that time, Susan.
His insulin was 7.2.
His insulin level?
Yeah.
We don't use the insulin level to diagnose diabetes.
Okay. Well, that will reassure him. And another quick question. I'm always battling my low thyroid and being so worried about seeing what he's gone through with his AFib. I go on something called GTA, and it seems to usually work. I'm always debating about the goitrogens and soy. Do you think they have a big impact on thyroid?
Generally speaking, we don't have recommendations for against soy, but in general, I would say you would have to use a lot of soy for it to really impact your health.
Oh, so you don't recommend soy, but a little bit of soy.
No, I don't have a recommendation for or against.
Pardon me?
I do not have a recommendation for or against the use of soy.
You don't have a recommendation for soy or the goitrogens?
No. In general, you can have variety in your diet and you want to avoid an excess in anything.
Okay. That includes soy.
That includes soy.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Susan.
It's very reassuring that the guy isn't going to just get diabetes.
No, he shouldn't.
I'll tell him it doesn't usually happen. Thank you.
Thank you. 1-800-348-2551. It is time for the second break of this show, your second few seconds break, Doctor. And then we'll be back with more calls. The phone number is 800-348-2551. And we'll return after some word from some underwriters. Welcome back to Medical Monday. I'm Sarah LeDuc in studio with Dr. Tanya Thompson-Bottomosi of St. Peter's Diabetes and Endocrine Care. The lines are still popping with plenty of, I was going to say patients, but we're not diagnosing on the air.
People or treating.
People with questions. So let's see, who has been on hold the longest? Let's go to Jordan in Del Mar. Hello, Jordan.
Hi there. Quick question about pre-diabetes. Seems to be a trend. Mm-hmm. I've had my A1C checked regularly for many years, and my level is always 6.1 to 6.3. And I'm wondering if having this pre-diabetes for such a long time is a problem.
It's not a problem per se in terms of the complications of having high blood sugars, but you're at risk of developing type 2 diabetes, and you do want to make changes to see if you can keep that at bay and even decrease the A1C further. It sounds like you've been stable for many years, though.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like what I eat, and I kind of like my lifestyle. I mean, I'm 76 years old, and I do have a sweet tooth, which I keep in check. So you say keeping between six, keeping within pre-diabetes and not going over that 6.4 is not damaging to me.
It's not particularly damaging, but a little bit of higher blood sugars, doesn't necessarily cause the same complications as high blood sugars in diabetic range. And if you like your sweets and you like your lifestyle, then I would suggest doing some counter activities such as exercise, if you're able to do that.
Good. Okay. So what you're saying is that as long as I don't go over that number, I'm at least okay, and it's better to get a lower number. Got it.
That's right.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thanks for calling, Jordan. 1-800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. We'll go now to Harlan in East Greenbush. Hello, Harlan.
Hello. Can you hear me, I assume?
Yeah. Yes, I can.
Okay, so question for the doctor. Two questions. Number one, how many medullary thyroid cancer patients have you seen? Number two is, given these the black box warning on these new diabetic weight loss drugs, should every patient have their calcitonin and CE checked before they go on those drugs?
Right. So, in terms of medullary thyroid cancer, I've seen a handful. It's not a common type of thyroid cancer. Papillary is much more common. We see a lot of those. Follicular as well. We see a lot of those. Medullary, not so much. And I have not seen an increase since the popularity of the weight loss medications. In terms of, you know, screening for medullary thyroid cancer, there's no general guideline or recommendation for that. So we do not routinely do a calcitonin or CA level.
Interesting. Well, I had both. I have both, or had both. I'm 21 years out, and I'm a miracle patient.
From medullary?
Molecular. Yeah, and I had a spot of papillary too, but more, you know, 8 neck dissections. I've been in a drug trial at Mass General for 8 years. That's been miraculous with targeted molecular therapy. Obviously, I couldn't get that in Albany. One of your partners, I think I was her first patient, good friend now. But I just wonder about that because we're seeing more and more medullary on our Facebook page. We're over 5,000 patients now, and it seems like every third day we get another patient, some from around the world. Not necessarily the U.S., but literally every 2-3 days we get a new patient that goes on the site.
So prior to the initiation of treatment with the GLP-1 agonist medications, these are the popular injectable weight loss medications that many people are using. They should be screened for risk factors for medullary.
Those medications basically fail within 2 years. So mine is targeted molecular therapy, Retevmo.
No, so I'm not talking about medullary thyroid cancer. I'm talking about screening for risk factors for medullary.
Oh, so they found my doc doing a great physical at 41, found a nodule on my thyroid. Like, you ever feel this? I'm like, no, we have big Adam's apples in my family. And, you know, he did a good job. He did the right physical, and one of your partners did my biopsy and ended up being, you know, not right. And she had my calcitonin and CEA checked, which were elevated. Not terribly, but I'm also a rare patient with low numbers that had a lot of disease. I think 80 out of 85 nodes over 8 surgeries were positive. So I didn't fit the normal bill, so to speak. And it wasn't hereditary. It was sporadic.
Well, thankfully you did well.
I'm still doing well.
Good.
I'm a miracle patient.
Great. Thanks for the call, Harlan. Have a great afternoon. 1-800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Let's go to Joan in Niskayuna. Hello, Joan.
Hi. I have kind of a complicated history, which I don't, you know, I know you, we, I don't have much time on the phone,
don't feel rushed. We've got a few minutes. You're okay.
Okay. I'm recently diagnosed as a diabetic. I had been pre-diabetic for many years. My A1C was, 6.6. I also have a rare lung cancer, and I just went through a year of treatment for that. I've had removal of most of my lung. I've had most of my pericardium removed. I've had chemotherapy. I've had radiation. And, you know, I've been through a lot. I've had lots of medication. My body hasn't done well with a lot of the medication. And during, you know, throughout this treatment, the doctors, you know, when I brought up that my sugar level seemed to be a little high, they said, don't worry about that. Get through these treatments. you know, make sure you drink a lot. If you have to drink sweetened beverages, you know, hot orange juice, that's all right, you know, da-da-da-da-da. So I was eating foods, especially during the last treatment, which was, it ended in the January. It was hard for me to swallow because I was having radiation to the area where the esophagus is, so it was hard to swallow. So I was having more ice cream than normal, you know, things like that. And I know that the A1C is based on a 3-month reading. The A1C, I think, was done in April, so I ended the radiation in January. So I can't blame it all on the cancer treatment, but I guess I just wanted to know the relationship between bumping into the diabetic range and all the terrible treatment for cancer. Oh, and in addition, I do have 2 thyroid nodules, which happened before the lung cancer diagnosis. One is fluid filled, the other one is solid, and they're monitoring that. So anyway.
Okay. In terms of the relationship between your treatment, and I'm glad to hear that you completed your treatment and things are better in that area. But in terms of the development of diabetes, the risk factors, it sounds like, in that case would be your treatment, because chemotherapy is often done with steroids during the treatment. And as was mentioned before, steroids can also raise the blood sugars. Some chemotherapeutic agents as well can cause hyperglycemia, higher blood sugars. And then your diet as well, because of what you were able to tolerate, you were eating softer foods. And typically that would include carbs, more refined sugars, your ice cream and things like that. And you may not have also been as active during your treatment if you weren't feeling well. So being more sedentary.
Yes, that's correct. And in fact, I'm not as active now just because it's difficult to breathe. So I used to be able to walk, you know, 20, 30 minutes at a time. Now I'm lucky if I can walk for 5 minutes.
Right. So these would be the risk factors for the development of type 2 diabetes. And as was mentioned before, the older we get, there's a higher risk, as well as genetics.
I don't know if I should ask if there's what you would recommend for someone in my situation. I mean, I know to try to increase, either if I can't do all the exercise at once, do, you know, 5 minutes of walking here, 5 minutes of walking there, et cetera, and to try to balance the foods that I eat.
Right. And that's exactly what you can do. You can do light exercise as you're able to tolerate. I always recommend light weights as well, maybe 2 or 3 or 5 pound weights, whatever you're able to do. If you have difficulty with your legs, you can do upper body exercises, balancing your diet better, increasing the fiber in your carb intake and limiting the portion sizes, more lean protein, and non-starchy vegetables on your plate.
Is it true, though, that once you are labeled a diabetic, you are always a diabetic, whether or not your numbers go down or not?
So once you're labeled as a diabetic, you already have a predisposition for higher blood sugars. Some people that are diagnosed with diabetes can come off of their medication with significant lifestyle changes. People that have significant weight loss, such as with bariatric surgery, they can also come off of their medications and they can have a normal A1C and normal blood sugars. But if those lifestyle changes were reversed, the sugars would go up again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and currently they do not have me on medication. They wanted me to do finger pricks every day, but I have not been doing it because I've been on and off steroids again. And I know that that will mess with the results of the finger pricks. So I've been waiting for them to stop prescribing steroids for me.
Okay, but while you're on the steroids, you know, you should also try to make those changes with your diet and whatever activity you're able to do.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call, Joan. Good luck.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Sure. I was about to give the phone number again, but that would be silly because we're almost out of time. Let's see if we can very, very quickly talk to Jim from Rosendale. Hello, Jim.
Hi. Thanks very much.
Sure.
I've read a lot about the impact of the endocrine system on of chemicals found in micro and nanoplastics in our bodies. And it's definitely an issue in animal studies, but harder to make connections in humans. Are you concerned about this? And do you have any comments about these chemicals in humans and how they might be impacting our health, particularly in the prenatal area?
Sure. It is an issue that is becoming more and more in the forefront of medicine. Endocrine disrupting chemicals would be found in plastics and other chemicals, and they can affect development more so in the pediatric population because we're concerned about, you know, early puberty and natural development, but also in older individuals. It is not an easy thing to avoid, but, you know, getting rid of the plasticware may be helpful, using more ceramic in terms of dishes and stainless steel water bottles and so on. These are things that may be helpful. But I think as time goes on, you know, it will be more and more of an issue that we look at in medicine. But these are some things that any individual can do to decrease the risk of endocrine disrupting chemicals.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you, Jim. We are essentially out of time, but we want to thank everyone who called in, apologize to the people we've left on the line. Thank you, Dr. Tanya Thompson-Badamosi of St. Peter's Diabetes and Endocrine Care for joining us today. How do you think it went? I thought you were great.
I enjoyed being here. I think Good. It went well. Thank you.
Really looked, sorry, I didn't realize that was such a gotcha question. I'll know not to ask for reviews on air next time.
I was just starting to relax.
I understand. Well, now continue to relax now. Now is the time. Again, our guest this afternoon has been Dr. Tanya Thompson-Badamosi of St. Peter's Diabetes and Endocrine Care. Support for Medical Monday on Vox Pop calls from Berkshire Plastic Surgeons in Great Barrington and Pittsfield, offering skin cancer screenings, Botox injections, fillers, cosmetic, and reconstructive surgery. BerkshirePlasticSurgeons.com. Thank you to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Bob Rathbun for answering the phones today. I'm Sarah LeDuc. Tomorrow on Vox Pop at 2 p.m., it's car maintenance and repair with Gordon Fricke. That is tomorrow at 2. Stay tuned now for the best of our knowledge.